TV Bible Study is a serious effort to study in depth every word of God. Each 30-minute lesson has been carefully arranged to assist you with your study of God's Word. And now for your TV Bible Study teacher, Richard Rogers.
We want to welcome you again to TV Bible Study. This is lesson 72 in our study of Bible history. We've studied, as you'll see by the review outline on your screen now, we've studied the Old Testament history as we talked about the revelation of the redeeming purpose of God in Genesis chapters 1 through 11. We saw the story of the Hebrew families that centered in Abraham in Genesis 11 through 50. We studied the Hebrew or the Israelite nation in the book of Exodus through Nehemiah. Turning to the New Testament, we looked at the geography and the political situation in the time of Christ. And then for a number of lessons, we studied the life of Jesus, our marvelous Savior. Then we looked at the early apostolic history of the first 12 chapters of the book of Acts as Peter and Philip and Stephen and Barnabas and Saul of Tarsus are the center figures. Now we're in the study of the journeys of the Apostle Paul. We've already studied his three evangelistic tours of Asia Minor and Europe as he established the great churches that will be responsible or were responsible for the evangelizing of the entire world. Now we're in the journeys of his journey to Rome. And so turn to the book of Acts chapter 21. We'll begin in verse 17. And on a map that you see now on your screen, we will see the journeys of Paul to the city of Rome. The first place in that journey is the city of Jerusalem. And several very stirring and at the same time very distressing things occur while he's here in the city. So turn to Acts chapter 21. And let's begin our reading with verse 7 as he arrives in Jerusalem at the end of the third evangelistic journey. Verse 17, Acts 21. When we arrived at Jerusalem, the brothers greeted us warmly. The next day, Paul and the rest of us went to see James, and all the elders were present. So the first thing that occurs here in Jerusalem is he visits with the church. And he finds out that there has been a misrepresentation of his teaching and his preaching going on in the city of Jerusalem while he's been laboring among the Gentiles. James tells him, and the other elders tell him, that even though many thousands of Jews have believed and are jealous for the law, they have informed or been informed that you are telling people to turn away from Moses and not to circumcise their children according to the custom. Look at verse 22. What shall we do? The elders ask. They will certainly hear that you've come, so do what we tell you. Take these men, verse 24, join in their purification rites and pay their expenses, so that they can have their head shaved. Then everyone will know that there is no truth in these reports about you, but that you yourself are living in obedience to the law. You see, Paul as a Jew had the right and did exercise that right whenever he was among his Jewish brethren to continue to live and walk orderly and upright according to the law of Moses. There's nothing wrong with the law of Moses. The law of Moses is still a good standard of morality. And if one were a Jew in the first century before the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, it was very likely and very logical that he continued to keep the vows of the Jewish faith. He continued to be at Pentecost and at Passover and all of the other things that were national observances. But now James and the other elders say in verse 25, as for the Gentile believers, we've written to them our decision that they should abstain from food offered to idols, from blood, from the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. He said, we've already stated that we know that the law has nothing to do with salvation, that the Gentiles do not have to follow the law to be saved any more than the Jews have to follow the law to be saved. But we want to silence, or the Jerusalem elders said, we want to silence this accusation that you're anti-Israel, that you're anti the law. Notice that Paul does exactly what they've asked in verse 26. The next day, Paul took the men and purified himself along with them. Then he went to the temple to give notice of the date when the days of purification would end and the offering would be made for each of them. And so Paul is now going to, so to speak, do good or go good. For the vows of these men, or the release of the vows of these men, have taken the Nazarite vow upon them. Paul is not against the Jewish law. He's not against the Jews following it for custom's sake. He's just against it being bound upon the Gentiles or upon the Jews for salvation. Now, whenever there is a chance or an opportunity for the Lord to have great success in preaching the gospel, there's always great opposition. And it's true in this case. Beginning in verse 27 of Acts chapter 21, the trouble begins. It will be unended trouble now for nearly 3 years, as Paul will struggle here with the Jews and be carried to Caesarea and tried before Felix and spend 2 years in Felix's jail and then be brought out when Festus becomes governor and tried by Festus and then tried by Agrippa and then finally, because he appeals to Caesar, go to Rome, where God evidently wanted him to end his life preaching in the capital city of the Gentile world, since he is the apostle of the Gentiles. Now let's look at this trouble that arises in the temple over Paul's preaching of the gospel of Jesus. Beginning in verse 27 of Acts 21. When the 7 days, that is the purification, were nearly over, some Jews from the province of Asia saw Paul at the temple. Now notice, from the province of Asia. There's where Paul has been preaching in the synagogues the gospel of Christ. It was there that they stoned him. It was there that they beat him. It was there that they imprisoned him. They'd done everything they could in the province of Asia to silence his preaching about Jesus among the Jews. Now, there are some Jews that see him in the temple, so in the latter part of 27, they stirred up the whole crowd and seized him, shouting, "Men of Israel, help us. This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against our people, our law, and this place. And besides, he's brought Greeks into the temple area and defiled the holy place." Now, none of that's true. As a matter of fact, notice the parentheses for our comment in verse 29. They'd seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, in the city with Paul and assumed that Paul had brought him into the temple area. Notice that assumed. Assumptions always get people in trouble. They should have asked. They should have inquired. Paul loved the law. He loved the temple. He loved the people of Israel. Read Romans 9 and Romans 10. And you'll find Paul's great love for his people. He was a Jew. He was a Hebrew of Hebrews. He was a Pharisee of Pharisees, he said in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He was proud of his Jewish heritage as he was proud of his Roman citizenship. And so none of this was true. He did not teach against the people. He did not teach against the law. He didn't teach against the temple. He had said the temple would be destroyed, but so had Jesus. In Matthew chapter 24, he'd not carried Trophimus into the temple area. They'd only assumed all of that. It was their prejudice, their preconceived notions that made them believe that. They hated Paul because they hated Jesus and they hated the gospel. In verse 30, the whole city was aroused, and the people came running from all directions. Seizing Paul, they dragged him from the temple, and immediately the gates were shut. While they were trying to kill him, they drug him outside the city, shut the gate, and they're going to stone him to death. While they're trying to kill him, news reaches the commander of the Roman troops of the whole city of Jerusalem in uproar. He at once took some soldiers and ran down to the crowd. When the rioters saw the commander and his soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. They're going to beat him and stone him to death. And the commander delivered him. Verse 33. The commander came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. Then he asked who he was and what he'd done. Some in the crowd shouted one thing, some another. See, a crowd never knows why they're doing what they're doing. The leaders did. They were going to stone this man after having beaten him, or beat him to death one or the other. And they didn't want the people to know why they were doing it, and so some said this, some said the other. Since the commander could not get at the truth because of the uproar, he ordered that Paul be taken to the barracks. When Paul reached the steps, now the crowd, you know, follows along, and we'll find out they do in the preceding verses. When Paul reached the steps, the violence of the crowd was so great that he had to be carried by the soldiers. The crowd kept shouting, "Away with him! Away with him!" Now there's an opportunity for Paul to present to the huge audience in Jerusalem the gospel of Christ. He takes the opportunity. He's more concerned with preaching than he is in preserving his life. Notice verse 37. As the soldiers were about to take Paul in the barracks, he asked the commander, "May I say something to you?" "Do you speak Greek?" he replied. "Aren't you the Egyptian who started a revolt and led 4,000 terrorists out into the desert some time ago?" Notice the confusion of this occasion. Nobody knows who he is. They don't know why he's arrested. They don't know what he's done. Paul answered in verse 39, "I'm a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no ordinary city." You see, Tarsus in Cilicia was a free city. Anybody born there was a Roman citizen. And so immediately this man knows Paul's a Roman citizen. He says, "Please let me speak to the people." Having received the commander's permission, Paul stood on the steps and motioned the crowd. When they were silent, he said to them in Aramaic, it would better read in Hebrew. He spoke to them in the native tongue that just a small minority of the Jews of that day spoke, only the extremely educated and the extremely religious. But he spoke to them in Hebrew. "Brothers and fathers, listen to my defense." When they heard him speak to them in Hebrew, they became very quiet. But we're going to stop reading there and just make a summary of what Paul says. We'll study the book of Acts in a coming study on TV Bible study. And we'll study Paul's sermon here to this crowd in detail. He rehearses all that he is, where he's from, what God has done, how he led him from a persecutor to a proclaimer, and how he was told by God to go and preach to all of the Gentiles, as he says in verse 21. "The Lord said to me, go, and I will send you away to the Gentiles." Boy, when he says that, the prejudice of the Jews is aroused. Look at verse 22. The crowd listened to Paul until he said this. Then they raised their voice and shouted, "Rid the earth of him. He's not fit to live." As they were shouting and throwing off their cloaks and flinging dust in the air, the commander ordered Paul to be taken into the barracks. He directed that he be flogged and questioned in order to find out why the people were shouting at him like this. When they stretched him out to flog him, Paul said to the centurion standing there, "Is it legal for you to flog a Roman citizen who's not even be found guilty?" Verse 26. When the centurion heard this, he went to the commander and reported it. "What are you going to do?" he asked. "This man's a Roman citizen." The commander went to Paul and said, "Tell me, are you a Roman citizen?" "I am," he answered. Then the commander said, "I had to pay a big price for my citizenship, but I was born a citizen," Paul replied. Those who were about to question him withdrew immediately. The commander himself was alarmed when he realized that he'd put Paul, a Roman citizen, in chains. Paul is not adverse to using any of his advantages for the gospel of Jesus Christ. He uses his ability to speak Hebrew to still a noisy crowd to preach to him. He uses his Roman citizenship to enable him to continue to be able to preach and not be flogged and finally killed. The next day, in chapter 22, verse 30, through chapter 23, verse 11, Paul goes before the Sanhedrin to be tried. It's a very stirring time, and we'll study it when we study the book of Acts. Paul, again, very shrewdly throws confusion into the trial. He has a way of being able to use that fantastic logic that he has to release himself or to gain relief out of many a difficult hour. The Sanhedrin is composed of about 60% Sadducees and about 40% Pharisees. The Sadducees control mostly the political decision and the Pharisees the religious. Paul knowing, it says in verse 6 of chapter 23, Paul knowing that some were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, called out in the Sanhedrin, "My brothers, I'm a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. I stand on trial because of my hope in the resurrection of the dead." When he said this, a dispute broke out between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. Verse 8, the Sadducees say there is no resurrection, and neither are there angels or spirits, but the Pharisees acknowledge them all. And now that argument keeps Paul from being tried and killed. And the Pharisees said, "This man's done nothing worthy of death. Maybe a spirit has talked to him, or an angel has talked to him." And so they're not able, you see, to really arrest or to kill Paul in any way. Verse 11 says, "The following night the Lord stood near Paul and said, 'Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify in Rome. And we begin in verse 12, actually the journey from Jerusalem to Rome. There's a plot to kill Paul, and Paul finds out about it and tells the Roman authorities of the plot to assassinate him. And so they're going to take him from the city of Jerusalem to escape the plot. They give him a bodyguard of some soldiers, and they go with him in verse 31 of chapter 23 as far as Antipatris, which is about halfway between the city of Jerusalem and Caesarea. And there they let a cavalry go with him, and they carry him all the way to Caesarea in verse 33. Notice in verse 35 that when they arrive at Caesarea, he orders that Paul be kept in guard in Herod's palace. He's there for 5 days. In chapter 24, we begin the trial before Felix and Festus and Agrippa. I'm going to have to discipline myself and not read a lot here, because we'll study this when we study the book of Acts, and we need to look at the journey that he makes to Rome very quickly. But before Felix, he finds out, or he knows, that Felix is an intemperate man, and he's living with a wife named Drusilla. And when she comes to the court one day, Paul discourses in verse 25 of chapter 24 on righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. And the text says Felix was afraid. The word afraid is really a less word than it ought to be. The word literally ought to be he was frightened to death. He was terrified. He shook. Paul, I don't know the sermon. I just got the outline. Righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. Well, whatever that sermon was, it terrified Felix. And Felix said, that's enough of that. That's enough for now. He said, you may leave. When I find it convenient, I'll send for you. He never wanted to hear that again. Now, he did want money. Verse 26 says, at the same time, he was hoping that Paul would offer him a bribe. So he sent for him frequently and talked with him. But I'm sure every time Paul talked about righteousness and temperance and the judgment to come, had Paul had any money, he wouldn't give it to Felix, because he's not interested in being released from prison. He is interested in going to the city of Rome. 2 full years passed, according to verse 27, and Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. But Felix wanted to grant a favor to the Jews, and so he left Paul in prison. In chapter 25, you have the trial before Festus through verse 12. And Festus, it really not much of a trial. He just calls for Paul to find out the charges that are against him, because he goes up to the city of Jerusalem, and the Jews say, you've got a man there that you ought to be trying and killing. We sent him, we tried to kill him here. And so he goes back to Caesarea, and after spending 8 or 10 days with him in Jerusalem, and he questions Paul, and Paul simply makes this defense in chapter 25, verse 8. He said, I have done nothing wrong against the laws of the Jews, or against the temple, or against Caesar. Now, Festus wanted to do the Jews a favor too. So he said to Paul, are you willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there on these charges? Now, Paul knows if he goes to Jerusalem, the plot to kill him will succeed. So he said, no, I'm standing in Caesar's court, and I'm a Roman citizen. If I've done anything worthy of death, I don't refuse to die. But since I've not, I appeal to Caesar. That makes Festus mad. He confers with his council, and he says, you have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you will go. But before he does that, before he sends Paul to Rome, he has a conversation and consults with King Agrippa. And King Agrippa asks for the opportunity to try Paul. And in chapter 26, Paul reviews all of his life to King Agrippa. And at the end of it, makes the statement in verse 23 that he is standing here on trial for simply preaching that the Christ should suffer and be the first to rise from the dead and proclaim light to his own people and to the Gentiles. Festus says, you are mad. And he says, the king is familiar with these things, for you know the prophets, don't you, O King Agrippa? And Agrippa sarcastically says, with this little bit of talk, you're going to try to make me a Christian? Paul said, with a little or a lot, I would that all men be as I am, except for these chains. Agrippa says, if you'd not appeal to Caesar, I'd release you. But since you appeal to Caesar you must go. Now, we don't have much time, and we really don't need much, because there's a lot of stations on the way to Rome, but there's really not all that much that's important for our study except to see the history of it. So let's look at this map back on the screen. Now let's see that so far we've covered the cities of Jerusalem and Antipatris and Caesarea. In chapter 27, verses 1 to 3, they journey up to the city of Sidon, where they'll be able to get a ship that will carry them to Rome. And Paul is allowed here a few days to visit with his friends, who provide for all of his needs on the journey to Rome. They sail to Myra in chapter 27, verses 4 to 6, and here they change to an Alexandrian ship bound for Italy. They'd been taking, evidently, a shuttle up until that time, and now they have the express ship that will take them, they believe, to the city of Rome. They'll find out different. In chapter 27, verses 7 to 8, they sail to Fair Havens, for after many days of traveling through adverse weather, they harbored in safety. Now, Paul tells them that they need to stay there. And in chapter 27, verses 9 to 17, against Paul's advice, they set sail for Phoenix, a harbor that's on the underside of the island of Crete, and a safe harbor for the entire winter. They're afraid of Fair Havens for the hard winter to come. And so they're going to try to make it to Phoenix. A northeaster, a strong storm, catches them as they journey under the underside of Crete, and it drives them all the way to this little island of Cauda, where they find only temporary relief. And the wind continues to drive them for 2 full weeks, where finally they're driven by the winds and are shipwrecked on the island of Malta, the 8th place on Paul's journey to the city of Rome. As they're shipwrecked, they might have expected on that island to find a unwelcome reception. But instead, the natives on the island of Malta extend all kind of kindness to them. And as they're before a fire, perhaps drying and getting ready to eat, a poisonous snake, bites Paul on the hand, and he shakes it into the fire. And they believe that Paul will soon swell up and die. But you know, Jesus had said in the book of Mark, chapter 16, verse 15 and 16, or actually it's verse 17 and 18, that when the apostles would go and preach the gospel to all the world, that nothing could harm them, that they'd drink poison and live, that snakes would bite them, serpents would bite them, and they'd live. And that's exactly what happened to Paul here on the island of Malta. After he does not die, they worship him, thanking him to be a god. And, of course, he refuses that worship. He heals Publius, his daughter, who's one of the rulers of the city, and he heals many others, perhaps as an expression of gratitude for the kindness that these islanders had shown him. In chapter 28, verses 11 to 12, they sail on another Alexandrian ship, a pagan ship, because it sails under the title of two twin gods. He sails on an Alexandrian ship, and he arrives in the city of Syracuse, where he tarries for 3 days. I'm sure that they're tired, and that the Roman soldiers are the ones that are needing the rest, and not simply the Apostle Paul. In chapter 28, verse 13, they go up to the city of Rhegium, and nothing is said there but that they tarried there. And from there they go to Petulia. You'll read of that in Acts 28, verses 13 to 14, and they allow Paul to stay with the brethren. He finds a church here. You see, Rome is a place, as he wrote them earlier from the city of Corinth, the church in Rome was a church whose faith was known throughout all the world. I'm sure that they've done a good job of evangelizing the boot. I'm positive that all of the present country of Italy had heard the gospel because of this powerful church that was in the city of Rome. And this church in Petulia is an example of that. And he stays with the brethren here a full week, 7 days. God is gracious in his providence, isn't he, to Paul? As Paul, along the way, has had several opportunities to visit the brothers and to confirm them and to be confirmed by them. The 12th place in this journey is really two, the Forum of Appius and the Three Taverns. A tavern is simply an inn, a place where men spend the night. And this is in Acts 28, verse 15. The brethren from Rome now have received word of Paul's arrival in their country, and they come out to this place to meet him. And they journey with him the next day into the city of Rome. The latter part of the book of Acts, Acts 28, verses 16 to 31, tells of the beautiful things that occur in the 2 full years that Paul is awaiting the trial and from which he will be released for a while before arrested again to die. And really, there are two things, or maybe three, that we need to know about this time in the life of Paul. He's guarded by soldiers in his own hired house. And actually, you find that in Acts 28, verse 16, verse 23, and verses 30 to 31. Now, he had gotten to Rome without any expense to himself. But he rents a house. They don't put him in the prisons. And I've seen, personally, the prisons that he would have been in the city of Rome. And you can be grateful to God that he was given the opportunity to live in a home rather than one of those narrow prisons. They're so sharp you can't lay down. They are so shallow you can't stand up. You have to sit in a crouched position or stand in a crouched position throughout all the time you're in one of those cells. So God has been gracious to Paul, as he is a Roman citizen, is allowed to rent a place, and he's chained to a soldier. The reason I know he's chained to a soldier is he writes Ephesians, Colossians, Philippians, and Philemon from this prison house. And in Colossians and in Ephesians, he says, I am an ambassador in chains. In the book of Philippians, he says that he's glad that many of the brethren in Rome were not ashamed of his chains. Read those four books, and you'll find the success of Paul's preaching. Many even of Caesar's household and some of the Praetorian Guard obeyed the gospel because Paul's imprisonment. Matter of fact, in chapter 28, verses 17 to 31, you read that Paul preached to the Jews and to the Gentiles and anybody else that came to his house with no one forbidding him. God is giving Paul one of the most fruitful ministries in all of his life when he's in chains. He prayed in the book of Romans that God would by any means grant him the grace to come and preach in the city of Rome. And God had used a Jewish trial. He'd used a centurion to protect him all the way to Rome. He'd used Roman money to get him there. And now he has two guards chained to him to keep anybody from harming him. He had a captive audience in those guards, and I'm sure that's why many of the Praetorian Guard believe. You see, as we've seen in the life of the brethren in the book of Acts, there are no powers on earth or in hell that can hinder the progress of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Much persecution comes because the gospel is faithfully preached, but victory always comes in its midst. I love to see Paul in prison here, because he shows that even chains cannot defeat Jesus nor take away the peace that he has in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness.
These lessons are available on video cassette tape for use with video cassette players or TV station broadcasting. Audio cassette tapes are also available. This systematic study of the Bible was designed for a variety of uses. Teacher training programs, substitute teacher needs, community Bible study programs on local TV, and hospital closed circuit programs, to mention a few. God bless your study of His Word.